Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm your host, Susan Larison-Danz, and today I know this is going to be quite an interesting and spontaneous conversation with our returning guest, Dr. Robert Foreman. And I know many of you have listened to his previous shows, and I think that today we're going to take this even deeper, and I know that there's also quite a new audience that may not be familiar with his work. And one of the things that we're going to do today is return to exploring some of the basics, so to speak, although I don't know if one could call them basics, of his work, in the sense that we are going to venture back into his book, Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be. But we're also going to see where that takes us in a very spontaneous way, as these conversations tend to go with Robert. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about Robert Foreman. He has been exploring spiritual enlightenment for 39-plus years, and he comes to this in a very personal way, and yet he is also a very distinguished professor of comparative religions. He has a PhD from Columbia University. He has made major contributions in the domain of mystical experience. He has 20 years experience as a professor, and that includes professorships at City University of New York and Vassar College. And most of all, he has really had a what I can only call very real experience with a remarkable group of spiritual way showers and spiritual seekers. And, you know, he really shares his own depths with us. And I think today we're just going to take this where it goes, and it should be very interesting. I will say that his website is up on the show page, enlightenmentain't.com. So if you want to explore more about Dr. Robert Foreman after the show, the resources are there for you. We do have an open chat room. If you have any questions or comments while we're having this conversation today, feel free to type that in the chat. So without any further delay, I'm going to welcome Robert back on the show. Hello, Robert.
Hi, and what a wonderful introduction that was. Thank you very much. You're just so sweet.
Well, thanks. And as usual, I can't read an introduction off the page, probably for you or for anyone, but especially for you. It always goes where it goes because it really reflects who you are. And you know, where we're going to take this today. I know we have a particular plan for this show, or at least at the outset, but whether we'll really follow that, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be an interesting show because I'm coming to this show after having some breakthroughs of my own, which I'm happy to announce to the, well, I don't know if I'm happy to announce, like it's some great announcement, but I am willing to let the audience know that I'm coming to this show in actually somewhat of a tumultuous state because of some of my breakthroughs, because that's the way such things can be. So we'll see how exploring your work through the eyes of some things that I'm going through, as we often do, we'll see where that takes us today. So, but at the outset, I think that it would be best if we really start this with talking about this notion of enlightenment. I mean, getting really back into your work, Bob, This notion of enlightenment that can prove so very elusive, which is why I chose to name the show the way I did today, and it's certainly something I've been encountering as well, and yet you have had a very powerful experience and a set of experiences that I'd like you to talk about, and something many of us who have had mystical experiences as well can also share, and how we integrate that into our lives. So I guess this is not really a question, it's an entry point, and I'm going to let you take it and start us off.
Well, good. I think the thing I want to share with you is that I think enlightenment is one of those terms that is both a wonderful goad and gets in the way. Mm-hmm. And it's a goad in the sense, well, it certainly was a goad for me when I was younger, in that it was, you know, it kept me meditating very regularly. It was a kind of drive in my life. I really want to gain enlightenment. And it was a kind of vision of, oh, life is going to be perfect somehow, or things are going to be wonderful. So it kept me going. It really was a kind of a magnet that drew me forward. And yet I also think that it became a kind of stumbling block. So that,
yes,
I did gain experiences that I think in retrospect were pretty close to what I think enlightenment is about. And the experiences had to do with discovering or kind of opening up of my own sense of awareness or my own sense of what I am or what I was or something like that. And the key for the word enlightenment is that when you gain a discovery of your own separateness from the world, your own sense of not being caught up in the world, it's permanent. That's, I think, the key for enlightenment. Lots of us have experiences, and I had quite a few experiences as a meditator of sort of discovering consciousness and having kind of breakthroughs to consciousness that were temporary. But what happened to me in 1972 was that this kind of breakthrough happened, and it came with a kind of physiological structure to it, in that it was almost systematic physiologically. But the key that happened was that once this sense of my own consciousness was established, it never went away. And in fact, it hasn't gone away in now, I don't know, 41, 43 years.
Yes.
41, 70 something. Yeah, 40 something.
yes.
and it's only grown. So that but the thing that was a stumbling block about it was that despite the fact that this is exactly what we all were looking for back in the 1970s and people that are serious meditators are looking for, it didn't match what I was hoping for. It did not become a perfect life. It's not like a personality transplant. It's not like everything became easy. Rather, it's that my life was witnessed now by this separate consciousness, this open consciousness. And I think it's had real value for me, but it was not like, woo-hoo, everything is great. You know, it wasn't even close to that. And that was quite a stumbling block for me. It was very difficult to come to terms with it. So, in effect, I think the lesson that I've had to construct, that I've had to come to terms with in the course of my life is that despite the fact that I was and am different than I was in 1971, it didn't transform my life such that it all became perfect. And I think that there's a lot of self-delusion that happens in the spirituality world. And and I was a victim of that. I was thinking, oh, everything's going to be perfect. But I think that what I want to say to people is that that very expectation, though it's important to have it, and it's important to be drawn on, and it's important to listen to our teachers and our gurus and whatnot, the expectations that we build can themselves get in the way. And can themselves serve as a kind of counterproductive a belief system. And so that's been the part of the struggle of my life, is coming to terms with the hopes and expectations that had driven me. And I think a lot of people are in that boat.
You know, Bob, one of the things that I see really reflected in your work, and something I've come to value more and more just independently, is how so often we think we there is something utterly imperfect about who we are, and there probably is, but that we have to let go of that somehow. There's something in what you express, this celebration in a way of who you are in all of its imperfection, I guess. And yet also having a handle on this window to the infinite, both. And how you talk about your anxiety and all, and your loneliness, and some of it resolves. Yeah. But yes, speak to that.
Yeah, I think that's been the sort of challenge of my life, in that I do know, or I do have a sense of connection with something open, wide open and infinite. And that's just part of my life. It's an everyday part of my life. And, you know, when I turn my attention in that direction, it's there. There's no question it's there. And it's been there when I've been awake and when I'm asleep. And, you know, it's just part of my life. And so the sense of openness, the sense of effortlessness that comes with that consciousness itself is really quite special and quite a magical side of my life. But what's been interesting is that it has not gotten rid of the anxieties. I can be sitting in, you know, the story told in the book is that I'm sitting there at the beginning of a month-long retreat. It's very snowy. I was afraid of being cold and freezing. So I was sitting there both in fear and in the infinite. And that peculiar coincidence of opposites right there is very hard to explain, and yet that's the nature of my life. And I think the nature of many people's lives, frankly, but it's certainly the nature of my life. And coming to terms with that impossible conjoining has really been the struggle of my life, and the struggle of the book, Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up To Be. It's like trying to come to terms with what this stuff is and isn't, what enlightenment is and isn't, what the infinite is and isn't, what, you know, what having a spark of God within one's breast is and isn't, has been really quite a challenge, and a much more of a challenge and much more of a serious existential undertaking than I ever would have imagined beforehand.
Yes. You know, it seems to me that we spend so much time both lecturing ourselves and at times lecturing to each other about, you know, releasing your fears, release your anxiety. And there could be maybe 20 or 30 or 100 steps, all of these programs and, you know, all of it geared towards, you know, getting rid of that dreaded ego. You know, that's often the term used. And yet, you know, what I glimpse in your experience, and you know what? More and more in mine as well, when I relate to what you say, is that are we all just, you know, wasting time with focusing on trying to eliminate something when we could actually focus more on opening up to something and just letting it be and saying this is the human experience. It's why we're here. And you know, it's not to say we can't live better. I appreciate very much how you say through your book, you know, you had a lot of anxiety, and you say that, you know, you actually did experience some healing in your life, not to say total elimination. And so there are keys to living better. And yet, do we just spend too much time focused on what's wrong with ourselves, thinking it's wrong, when it's really human and it's us?
Yeah, this sort of old saw, this old saw that you know, we should be rid of the ego and we shouldn't care about that, I think it's just leading people in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I have an ego. I know my name is Robert Foreman. I know I have a PhD. I like to be in shape. I like to be, you know, liked. And I think all of that is lovely. You know, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, wanting to earn a good living and living a decent life and getting married and having people like me. I think all that is lovely. Now, where we go wrong is if that becomes the only thing, if we're attached to how that is, if our care that people like us is the main thing that we worry about, now we're attached. And we're attached to the ego. So there's nothing wrong with having an ego. There's a lot wrong with being real caught up in it, real attached to it. So I think that if we can kind of let go of the hold of some of those concerns, the fact that we have those concerns is fine. But the fact that we have those concerns and are overwhelmed with them, that's where we get ourselves into trouble. So it's a question of having an ego and being able to stand back just a little from it and being able to kind of laugh at yourself or being able to look at it and say, yeah, I want to be like, isn't that cool? You know, so which is different than being caught up in it. So I think, yes, the concern to not care or not have an ego, I think it's just getting in people's way. It's like, no, there's nothing wrong with having that stuff. And in fact, I want to be able to, you know, I want to have my books sell. I want to have my money do well. I want to drive a decent car. And I think that's a kind of goad to work hard and to do what I can and to make it work. And all of that stuff, I think, is wonderful. But it's, again, it's being overwhelmed with that that gets us into trouble. So I think that it's right in there that I think there is a message here of there's nothing wrong with having an ego. There's nothing wrong with caring about this stuff. There's a lot wrong with caring too much.
Yes. Yeah, it seems that there's this, and it can be a somewhat elusive balance. I mean, I think all of us are on a journey to finding that balance. And so often, you know, we really are taught by a lot of different teachers to, and maybe we misunderstand what they're even getting at. So, you know, that's the other thing is I think sometimes we see things just on a surface level and we think, oh, you know, I have to get rid of all of this, you know, within myself, whatever it is, all want. And you know, we're back to that elusiveness of enlightenment. And it seems to me that it's the path to dissatisfaction is what it is. It's almost, it's the path to the opposite of what so many of us seek, which is very sad in a way.
Yeah. I think there's no way around that. That is to say, when my teacher, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, used to talk about enlightenment, I heard him with the only set of experiences that I had had. So when he talked about enlightenment, I, of course, heard it in terms of the kinds of experiences I'd had. But when this stuff kind of dawned, frankly, I didn't recognize it because it was not part of my experience. That's the whole interesting juxtaposition in that when you hear something like enlightenment or you hear something like pure consciousness or you hear something like the word in Hinduism is moksha, when you hear these words, the only way you can hear them is by framing them in the state of consciousness that you've been in or framing them in terms of the experiences that you've had. But imagine you get an experience, and for me this was the case. Imagine you get a transformation or imagine you get an experience, and when the experience comes, it seems so innocent. It seems so obvious, but it's unlike anything you've known before. So that you don't quite recognize that this newness is just what the guru or just what your teacher, just what that spiritual dude was talking about, because it's like it wasn't part of the language that you knew. So I had this experience, and you know, it was so quiet, and it was so easy, and it was so natural that when I had it, I'd been expecting these neon lights to go off. I'd expected my hair to get on fire. But this was much more ordinary and much more natural, and as a result, much more organic and real. So that I heard Maharishi in the terms that I had. And I read these books in the terms that I knew. And when this stuff actually came or turned itself on, and I describe it as best I can in Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be, when this stuff came, I honestly didn't recognize it. It was so different than what I was anticipating. And I think that's always going to be the case.
Yes. Well, I think that we can't completely understand it. I know I had an experience that was much more dramatic about 10 years ago. And it, you know, I've talked about it in passing on the show before, and it changed me forever. And I wasn't even really looking for it. And in my case, it kind of spiraled out of control, a true spiritual emergence. I mean, now I understand it better. I've actually had experts on the show, and it was like breaking wide open because I came from a very rigid place. And when I opened up, it was incredible. And I had never experienced that kind of, I guess I'd have to call it love. I mean, it was a feeling of overwhelming acceptance and love that I think I needed to feel as part of my opening up, just because when, you know, we've talked in other shows about my coming from a very conservative path where any kind of relationship with God for me, or what, or the universe or spirit or whatever you want to label it, was tainted. It was a very dark thing, really, because it wasn't something you could trust. And so, but I had to deal with that dichotomy of love and fear. You know, was this real? Was this counterfeit? I think there are people out there, and maybe you've studied this even within your own, you know, scholarly path in this sense, that, you know, for some of us, when we open up, you can actually react to it in some fear if you've been taught that it's something to distrust, and yet it doesn't go away. I mean, I think that there's both, is that you can question the experience itself, you know, what was its source, depending on what you believe, if you believe there could be dark sources of such things, and yet deep down you know that it's not dark at all, that it's filled with light. And so not sure exactly where I'm headed with this, but I think that other people have come to this in different ways, and
I think you kind of view it in
different ways.
Yes, of course. I think you nail it there, in that how we engage this stuff is very much conditioned by the background of beliefs we have about it, the thoughts we have about it. So that if one grows up in a very rigid world, or in a very in a world that is, as it were, defended against other kinds of experiences than they kind of describe, then of course it would be very scary to break through that. If you grow up in a world that says, yes, people can have this experience and it's a wonderful thing, I think the attitude about it would be remarkably different. And so for me, you know, I've been practicing meditation for a while. On these paths, I've been doing some yoga. And so for me, it was like, this was the kind of thing I was very curious about. But when it came on, the disappointment for me, as you know from the book, the disappointment for me was it was not as flashy, it was not as exciting, it was not as life-transforming as I was frankly expecting and hoping for. And that was very hard to come to terms with. And that's been part of my challenge of, have you come to terms with the everydayness of all this stuff and with the fact that you still have to be building a life and still have to be finding your way into happiness and finding your way into, you know, sanity. So... Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right in that the rigidity of the system that you grow up in very much conditioned how you responded to your breakthroughs.
What's really interesting about it, though, is it didn't exactly change that it had happened. I mean, I may have responded to it and analyzed it in every possible way, but it was still there, and I feel that it changed me forever 10 years ago. I will never be the same. It changed me forever, and that's reflected in your book, and not in a negative way. That place is there, and it's really hard to explain. I know that you got your confirmation from Ram Dass in the book. It's a really interesting part of the book that I think
we've talked about
before.
Yeah, but that didn't come, my goodness. That didn't come until 25 years after all this. That was much later. And so I found myself in this very peculiar place for many, many years of, am I just kidding myself? Is this true? Is this really what I think it is? And, you know, there was this kind of questioning of it all that just wouldn't let up. So Ram Dass did me a huge favor right at that moment. He said, yeah, this is it, not to worry. And that was just, finally I could stop asking the darn question. It was very freeing.
Yeah. And, you know, that is a real gift that we can give to one another. I'm finding that the more I go down this path, and the remarkable people that I meet on this show, I mean, I'm meeting more and more amazing people. You were one of the first amazing people I was fortunate to have. It's true. And, you know, it continues. And I end up interacting. You know, what's so cool about this show is it doesn't end at the show all the time. You know, I'll interact with these wonderful way showers here and there. And I think there is a part of us when we're on the path, we do look for confirmation from each other. We do look for people who've really been there, who've had a lot of experience, and it really does help. And I think that, you know, that's been true on my path too. But, you know, it's led to something else. And this will, I think, open up a whole new part of this discussion. You know, the more we engage, Bob, the more I engage with the people who are really, I don't know, living it, I guess is one thing. They're living lives that are just so real, as much as they can. The more I find these people, and I find some people who aren't really living it, and you can kind of steer away from those people. I mean, I don't find that as much engaging, but the people who are really engaging, they go really deep. I mean, I know you have this this phrase, you know, going deeper together, and there's this discussion of relationships in the book. And, you know, I'd like to kind of venture into that because I find, and maybe many others who are listening find this more and more, we want to engage at a deep level with other people, and yet we lack the place to do it. You know, where do you find these spaces where you can just be utterly honest? I mean, no holds barred. And, you know, more and more, it's hard to be no holds barred, but just relate and at the deepest of levels about everything.
Oh, goodness.
Surface
and you're inviting me here to give a plug, so I'm going to give a plug. And then
Go right ahead.
Yeah. I run an organization called the Forge Institute, F-O-R-G-E, and we have started a program called Soul Jazz. And Soul Jazz is designed to be to give lessons in, or workshops or webinars in exactly how to do this, and then to create a community forum, community events, community, you know, face-to-face communities in which people are invited to explore their own depths in increasingly honest ways. And
yes.
So the website address for that, in case somebody wants to know, is Go Deeper Together. We will be launching our first programs within a couple of months. We are just about ready. The website is almost complete. So if you put in Go Deeper Together, it'll give you a sign-up sheet, and then we'll inform you within a few weeks of the first courses. So that's the plug. Now, what I also want to say is that most of us have a friend or two, that if we set it up right, and if we say to our friend, look, I really want to take our relationship to the next level. Would you be interested in doing that with me? If they say, yeah. Then you say to them, okay, let's think about what it's going to take to make this safe. Generally, people want to say, whatever we say is confidential, whatever we say is no judgment. I mean, people come up with their own rules and regulations about how to do this. And then you begin, and the challenge is always, can you tell what is really true, which is different than what you like to present. It's different than what you want to be true. You know, if you're anxious, most people don't like to say, I'm feeling anxious. Most people don't like to say, you know, I'm afraid I'm failing. Most people don't like to say the stuff that does not appear to be so I. But I think that if we can open up a space where people can say, I'm both afraid and also I am really happy, or I am feeling down or anxious today, and today I'm feeling like I've done a good job at something. I mean, that's the beginnings of saying what is really true and exploring a feeling that you have, but you don't know what it is. It's exploring a conflict that you have, but you can't put your finger on it. It's like that's where life becomes juicy and real. And so I want to encourage people to find that friend and find their relations, and maybe a spouse, though that's very rare, or find a friend which you can really talk to. And as for the spouse being rare, I want to say that because you've been with a spouse for a long time, or even not such a long time, that's probably the most difficult relationship to be really, really honest with, because there's so much at stake. I think that that's more like graduate school, so I would very strongly encourage people to find a friend first to do this with, find somebody that you feel like you can trust, and if you can't trust them, then find another friend. So, I think people ought to do this. But again, the website address, and thank you for the right to give me, for the ability to give a plug, the website address is godeepertogether.com, and we'll teach people how to do this and provide you with friends and colleagues to do it with.
Well, you know, it's funny, that kind of came up in a very natural way, that it does enter right into the program. And actually, I'm really glad to hear that it really is going somewhere, because we haven't talked about the programs that you're developing in a while.
I haven't talked about Soul Jazz before. This is my eighth time.
I didn't know the status. And so I'm kind of,
yeah.
I want to make sure the audience, actually, that was a very natural plug, because I didn't even know what the status of your programs, whether they were going forward or not. I had no idea. So it's interesting going forward.
Oh, very much so. And the holdup has not been the ability, it's not been the teachings. The holdup has been getting the website put together. It's been slow and arduous, and
mm-hmm.
we're pretty well
on
the website. But, yeah, but in any case, yes, we're definitely moving along. Thank you for asking.
No, that's great to know that this is developing. And, you know, it really does hit at something, though, because I think that, you know, we find ourselves, I want to explore this more deeply, just because I'm finding this happening to me more, and it can be almost perplexing when it does, and I know this is happening to people. It tends to happen online a lot, where you get into these conversations, and they become very deep. And, you know, it can become almost addictive if you really get into it, you know, where you're really, it's almost like peeling off the skin of an onion too, because the more deeply you go, the more you discover about yourself, and you realize, well, you know, maybe what you were sharing at the outset was more surface level and wasn't really real, you know. And then the deeper you go, don't you become more real, more and more real, and before you know it, you're introducing yourself to yourself in a way.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
That seems to be, and this is the kind of experience I'm starting to have more with those of you out there I would call spiritual way showers, where it's profound and it's life-changing. But it can also be confusing, too, because you look at this and you're like, you know, what is this? Because this kind of depth, I don't think we're used to encountering every day. And I sense,
yeah,
you know,
many of us
are being called to this.
And I couldn't agree more. And I think that's something that our culture might be developing that's never been before. That is, a lot of us have learned about meditation or prayer and these things tend to be done alone or you know, alone within a kind of, you know, a church setting. But they're done kind of privately. The idea that you can go with another person into something deep and do it together and have conversations and dialogues that are truly deep and truly mind-bending in the sense of opening up and opening up and opening up, I think that's a very rare thing. But I think it's something that our culture is developing that I don't think has been around before. I don't know of any other culture, with all the mysticism that I've studied, I don't know of any culture that has fostered real, honest to goodness, truth-telling dialogues. And I think that's something that we are trying to teach one another to do.
Yes.
Let me read you something from the book.
Go ahead.
Can I read you something from the book?
Sure.
And this is on page 109 of Enlightenment, what it's cracked up to be. Where we are keeping secrets from ourselves, we have to work hard to not see them. We can't just be loose there. We can't possibly play effortlessly. The fear of those very truths and the pain that is hiding from them grips us and holds us back. All that effort to not know becomes part of us, part of our persona, and holds us down into the mundane. Our secrets become our chains into the world. But when we share those secrets with ourselves and with another, it's as if that we break those chains and we open up into the world more effectively. The vastness, that is to say, the sense of openness that comes with the infinite, issues a challenge. The challenge is, tell the truth. Tell it so completely that there's nothing left to be afraid of. Tell it so thoroughly that there is no room for hidden lies. Tell it so completely that you become effortless. Silence beckons ever so slightly and always towards honesty. It challenges us to let go of every lie we tell ourselves. It calls us to conceal nothing, to keep no secrets from ourselves. And then it beckons some more. Don't give up, it whispers. Don't stop until you're entirely open. No kidding. Don't quit. And I think that that's something that, we can help each other do. Tell each other the truth. Tell each other the truth in such a way that it takes us further and further and further into what we really are. And I think that that's one of the gifts that we're developing in our culture that I don't think another culture has really developed.
You know, I begin to think, you know, in your book, there's this theme of loneliness. I mean, certainly within the beginning through, and you know, so many of us, we have this yearning. I mean, I have really been encountering this recently. It's like, it is a kind of loneliness. I mean, you can be with people and still be lonely because you're not, and in some degrees, we're not even being with ourselves, so to speak, if we're not being honest with ourselves, which makes it even worse. But there's just this yearning to connect. And, and you know, this isn't intended. It's so funny. You know, this may sound like it's intended to be a plug, so to speak, but I think it's really, it actually wasn't necessary. This is really important what we're getting at. No matter how you go about it, I think we need to stop being so afraid of these connections. And I will introduce one thing, and I know this comes up in your book as well, is what do you do when it's with someone of the opposite sex? You know, because that's when it can feel really awkward. I mean, you're going deep, and you're exposing your soul, and it can be confusing. And I think there are people experiencing this. I have come to the conclusion that a lot of these things that, you know how people, they stumble into conversations online. I've seen them on certain forums and things. They can go pretty deep, and it can become confusing or even threatening. Like, you know, it could become even something that someone else might view as threatening. And yet, how can we find a way to safely venture into these, or can you never be safe? I mean, just be free, you know, just go into this depth and be free and stop worrying about all the conventions and things that normally you might worry about.
Oh, you bring up such an interesting question. So let me reflect in a couple of ways. And I don't know if I know an answer, but I'll give you what I got. First of all, truth-telling, whether with somebody of the same sex or somebody of the other sex, or if you're gay, somebody of the same sex.
Well, great, and I should say that, too. That's important.
Sure.
Very true.
But you know, let's say we're talking about heterosexual types. Truth-telling, whether it's with somebody of the same sex or the other sex, is probably the most erotic thing I know. It is always erotic to tell a new truth. There's something terribly sexy about it. And when I say sexy, I mean because you're touching another person. And that's really what love and sex is all about. It's really about that sense of touch. So I think part of the discipline of truth-telling, or better still, part of the discipline of discovering the truth out loud, is to recognize right from the start that it has a kind of an erotic tone to it. That is to say, it does feel like you're making contact with another person. And if you're in a position, that is, say, if you're unmarried and the other person is unmarried, then you know, off you go. There's something you might want to play with that. And if you're in a position where that's inappropriate, like you are married or you're in a power position with this person, then you simply have to say to yourself, I feel this erotic, you know, attraction, or I feel this love of another person, but I can't act on it. And so it's the fact that you feel it doesn't mean you have to act on it. And that's a very delicate line, but an important line to respect. You know, I've had lots of times where I've had wonderful conversations with people of the opposite sex, and there virtually always is a kind of an erotic component to it. But I've never acted on it. And I've been able to say to myself, wow, this is a very cool person, a very cool feeling, a very cool relationship, and I'm a married dude, so knock it off. You know, so that's kind of the way I feel. What I knock off is not the ability to talk, not the ability to tell the truth, not the ability to sort of go to some new level of truth, but rather I knock off the thought that, you know, I'm going to jump into bed with this person, or the thought that this is an appropriate thing for me to do. You know, there are times that it is appropriate, and times it's not appropriate. When it's not appropriate, you simply have to respect that. That's all I got. In other words, it doesn't get easy. It doesn't get simple. It doesn't get without its you know, a kind of risk that's built into it. But you have to be able to respect the fact that you can't go there, and that's the truth. And that's I think, the only answer to this. So I would rather be, what am I trying to say here? I would rather be disciplined in how I handle this eros than to not get close to another person and not tell the truth. Telling the truth is probably the greatest gift that we can give to each other. And to not act on that in a sexual way, I think, is a very small sacrifice that I have to make when I continue, because I love to continue doing this with folks, male and female.
Yes. Yeah, I think...
Honestly, Susan, though, I feel like that... I'm sorry. Honestly,
no,
go ahead. Let me just say this. Honestly, I feel that that's a lousy answer. You know,
no,
I
actually,
wish I could say...
that's a really good answer.
I wish I could say it was easy. I wish I could say, yeah, it's easy to just go to drop this and not feel it and don't feel the arrows. It's like, no, I want to feel the arrows. I have to feel the arrows. It comes with this stuff. It's like, I want to feel like I'm opening up to this person. I want to discover who they are. That's a great gift. But it does have its risk in it, and it does have the sacrifice that I know I have to make. I can't go there, period. I can't allow myself to do that.
Right. Well, could it be, Bob, and this really is hitting on, I think it's hitting on something that's happening quite a bit and actually can often lead to some harmful consequences, you know, when people don't understand how to deal with it. I think that it does happen in the spiritual community. And I really think this is a very important thing to look at, because I think it takes honesty. I think that, you know, maybe could it be that we're having trouble dividing, you know, gosh, I don't even know how to say this, you know, how we approach the love we have for another person. Just, you know, could it be that, you know, it is confusing because you're human beings, so you're going to have an entire spectrum of feeling. And yet, at some level, it really is okay to love another person. You know, when you go deeper and you get to know people, you're going to love a lot of people, is what I would wager. Is that, I mean, technically, you could end up loving the whole world, but that's in a general way. I'm talking when you really get to know people, whether they're of, you know, whatever your sexual orientation is. I mean, you're going to... And that can feel uncomfortable because there's always risk, like you say. And what about dependencies, you know, where you feel like the deeper you go, the more you reveal yourself with a person, that you could be forming some dependency. And we're so afraid of that. You know, we don't want to be dependent on people emotionally, because then we feel like, you know, we can be setting ourselves up for something. What about that? How do we venture in, you know, take the whole sexual energy aside, which I'm sure does exist. I believe it exists. I've seen it. But just that whole notion of, boy, this is getting pretty scary, because I'm going really deep and I'm becoming attached in a way. You know, how do we approach that in a healthy way so that we can feel free and not frightened?
You know, I think we deserve a phone call about the principles of the Soul Jazz program that we're teaching. One of these days we should do that, because this kind of touches on that. But let me just say this. Any time that you tell a real truth or start touching into what is really true, one of the marks of being true is that it's new. And one of the emotional qualities of newness is anxiety. When I tell something that is really true for me, there's a kind of nervous energy. It comes out as anxiety or a certain kind of excitement or giddiness. You know, it's like the anxiety itself is a kind of mark that you're coming up with something that's true. Well, when you get anxious, you have one of several ways to respond to it. One is you can kind of walk into it and say, yes, I'm feeling anxious. You're going to open up to it. Another is that you can say, oh, I'm getting this truth from this other person, and so you, the anxiety has you kind of leaning on another person in a way that's not entirely healthy. Or conversely,
yeah.
you can run from it and run from the truth. And that, you know, for that, it's like, oh, those people are bad because they're saying something so new. So that I think running from your anxieties is another way to handle it. So that sometimes you think, oh, the guru has given me this, or my girlfriend or boyfriend has given me this. And so you do get kind of dependent on them. But you're dependent on them because it's the excitement of newness that they've handed you. And when
yes.
they hand you this newness, you know, if you can come to terms with the fact that, yeah, it's new and I'm getting some excitement or anxiety from the newness, and, you know, it's like if you can open up to it, it's actually a very cool thing. But
yes.
it can seem kind of scary to you, which is, I think, in part what seemed to happen to you when you were sort of having the breakthrough that brought you out of the more fundamentalist Christian world. There was a kind of newness to it, and you began to feel like, oh my God, it's so new, it's different, blah blah blah. So I think it kind of goes with the territory. So yeah, leaning on somebody, becoming dependent on somebody. But before we get off it entirely, I do want to say this about the sexual stuff.
Yes.
If we tell the truth, it has this delicious opening into another person. And what I said before is it always has this kind of erotic component. If we tell the truth, there is this opening out, and it is nothing other than love. Love
yes.
and being really listened to. Love and being able to speak your heart. These things are virtually the same thing. And so truth-telling does generate love. And it's a good love. If it generates the kind of sexuality that can get you into trouble, I think we have to be very self-conscious of that. We're very conscious of that. But nevertheless, I want to say that truth-telling and real listening and really opening up to another person, there's no other word for it but love. And so I think that I want to commend people that can do that. And commend, even if it's just a temporary thing, even if they think it's all about sex, which it isn't, I think that being able to do that is just a wonderful gift to a human life.
Yes. And joy. I mean, I think that it gives incredible joy to be able to open up. And I'm not sure I got that until fairly recently. You know, and I do believe that more people are starting to do this. And now when you're relating with somebody, I know we're really, let's see how we're doing on the time. Well, we're okay. What if one person is at a really deep level and the other person is more of just a listener? I mean, they respond and understand, but I guess sort of in a teacher mode. Can you ever get them to go deeper, or should you even ask? I mean, I guess in your book you have examples where somebody asked, you know, can we take this deeper? I mean, it seems that you would invite that to be honest. I mean, unless they're in some formal relationship, like, you know, someone is formally counseling someone else or whatever, but you can't force someone to go deeper. I mean, you can't. And so are there imbalances that can sometimes introduce themselves, and does that then result in a sense of dissatisfaction, like, you know, one person is going really deep and the other person, well, not as deep. You see what I mean?
Absolutely, and the answer to the question is, unfortunately, yes. That is, every time you tell the real truth, you are putting yourself at risk. Because when you tell the truth, you're revealing something of who you really are.
Yes.
And if you reveal something of who you are, and the other person doesn't respond with something roughly similar, that is to say, I've told you my truth, and then you give me a kind of pre-cooked answer. Frankly,
yes.
it hurts a little bit. It's not like you
yes.
die. You know, it's not terrible, but it hurts a little bit. You have been wounded a little bit because you've made yourself vulnerable and the other person doesn't go there with you. They don't drop down. And so you're kind of opening yourself up. Imagine you're opening up a little door, and you say, here, you want to see my room? And the other person says, no, thank you. And it hurts a little bit. And so,
yes.
you know, when that happens, I think most people, if they're sane, they'll open themselves up a little bit, and they invite the other person in. And they might do that, and if the other person doesn't respond in a way that's roughly at a similar level of depth.
Equivalent.
Yeah, roughly equivalent level of openness. It hurts a little bit. You might go a second time, maybe a third time, but you got to be crazy to keep opening yourself up if the other person doesn't respond. And so
right.
there's a kind of, I don't know quite how to put this, but it's as if in a conversation, I put out something like a feeler, and I'll sort of offer something a little deeper than where I am. And I'll see, does the person go there with me? Can they do the same thing? Can they drop down a notch? And so if they can, then I'll drop down another notch, and I'll say, yeah, this is really what's going on with me, and then, oh, here's what's going on with me. And if they do that, then I'll keep going. But if they don't do that, and they say, oh, well, what's wrong with you is that you have, you know, it's like you want to say, this is not a safe environment. So there's a kind of feeling out of each other in terms of how deep can we go. And I think that we need to develop, most people have them, I think, but because I've been doing this a while, I probably developed my tentacles fairly well. But you need to develop these sort of antennae that allow you to see, is this person capable of going deep with me or not? And if they're not, then you'd be an idiot to offer yourself up and just, you know, get somebody that affects us. Well, here's what's wrong with you, and you kind of get slapped down. And that's not fun. It's not helping you. It's not helping them. So that you want to look for people that can play. You look for people who can go to a similar depth. And, you know, I'm a very lucky man. I probably have 10 or 12 of those people that I can do that with. Because I've been doing this, you know, kind of officially for a while. And people recognize this is something I like to do. But most people that I know, they probably have one or two people that can really, if they're lucky, they have one or two people that can really go to new depths with them. And when I say new depths, I think the emphasis there is on the word new. It's not saying the same old thing. It's discovering afresh, in new ways, what makes you tick, what your conflicts are, what your strengths are, what you're really pleased about, what you're not pleased about yourself, and being able to be completely honest with another person is its own kind of gift. And you want to look for people that can share that kind of gift with you. And they will not share it if you don't share back with them. They will not tell you new truths if you don't tell your new truths. But if you tell your new truths to them and they can go there, there's nothing like it. It's just like a kind of jazz of the soul. It's just gorgeous. So
yeah, I love that. You know, now I begin to get what this jazz means. I mean, it's jamming, like that song, you know, we're jamming in the name of the Lord. What is that song?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. It's like that. And in order to actually be in a jam session with someone, there has to be participation. I mean, if one person's playing the whole time, that's something
else. It's not jazz.
No, it's not jazz. And it is. And, you know, I will say this, though. I have seen situations. People can be very empathic and compassionate. And I think that that's kind of a different situation. How are we doing? We're at 6 minutes. Is that not necessarily, oh, you know, you should do this. You know, that kind of thing for me, that just slams the door shut. I mean, if someone's going to start putting a whole bunch of shoulds in the conversation right after I've opened up, then I'm pretty much done. I mean, I mean, maybe I'll learn a little bit, but maybe the person has something important to share. But that's not going to be, especially if you've come from a fundamentalist background like me, that's really challenging for me. But there can be another type of response that is very compassionate, very empathic, yet never really goes very deep. You know, it's just empathy, and there is loving empathy. And I'm not quite sure what to do with that kind of situation, Bob, because that's when you still do feel wounded. I love that you feel wounded. You do, because you just so want to go deeper, but you don't know how. And, you know, maybe this person just isn't in that space, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm getting at? That
absolutely.
And it seems
it's just
another level of this that occurs, which can be satisfying, too, to get that empathy and understanding.
Yeah, and I know some people that are great at that. You know, a lot of shrinks are really good at that. But the idea that you can share something of yourself and the other person will share something of themselves.
That's it.
And then you
that's
share
it.
Something of your life.
Yes.
It's like that's where the jazz happens. But, yeah, there's a lot to be – first of all, there's a lot to be said for empathy. there's a lot to be said for just efficiency. I have one friend, I consider him a very dear friend, and we basically talk about, you know, how to build, you know, a new wing on your house or how to fix the toilet. I mean, it's like, you know, and this is fun stuff. I really like doing it with this guy. You know, and he's
yeah.
a good, so it's not like all of your conversations have to be like this, but
well,
it's precious to find the friend that you can do this with. It's precious to find a colleague that you can really share and discover who you are with. That's just remarkable what happens. So, yeah, there's a value in empathy, and there's a value in you know, in just sort of talking about the world in very practical terms. But this other thing, this eyes-out kind of relationship where you're both sharing what you're about, it's like, oh, that's where the magic happens. That's just so delicious.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and I think more of us are seeking this. I mean, I personally am seeking this, and I'm like dancing around it more and more, and you don't know where to find it. It sounds like you're actually
yeah.
creating a space.
Yeah, I'll have to
where
invite,
it's possible.
I'll invite you and all of our listeners into this the Soul Jazz program when it cranks up. I'll definitely send you an invitation because I think you would love it. It's exactly
yeah.
this. It's our opportunity to discover with other people what we're really about. So bless
yes.
you for bringing this up. Yeah.
Well, you know what? It was very natural. As much as it may have seemed like, oh, you know, we planned on promoting the Soul Jazz program. You know, the funny thing, which is actually really, I'm happy in this, to be honest, is that it just happened because I had no idea how far you had come with that. I didn't know if it was still going or what was going on with it. And I think that even, you know, both within that context and outside of it, you know, I think we need to really be open to these situations because I think it is a part of the spiritual path. It is something that's really happening more and more as we open up. And it's certainly a part of my journey now to, you know, just,
yeah,
you know, on this show it's happening. I mean, what do you think this show is like? I mean, that's
yeah.
what this show is like, is we start dancing into these areas even on the show. And so that's
yeah.
really that's a real interesting situation when, I mean, I'm doing it right now. I am opening up to thousands
mm-hmm.
of people right now. And
mm-hmm.
And I don't, that's okay. I mean, I think
yeah.
that it will help. And that's a whole different thing. But I just
yeah.
know that this is happening to us. It's an experience. And
yeah.
I think
you're right. I think this is what people are longing for. And I think that as we get more and more into our technology and texting and emailing, I think people recognize that the sort of being able to talk to somebody in a real way or face-to-face or at least on the phone or a video phone, it's like it's a huge important piece of our lives that we're sort of sacrificing for all our efficiency. So, yeah, I completely
yeah.
agree. This is a piece of our lives we all should be working at.
Yeah. Well, this conversation went by very quickly, and I know we're in the last minute and a half of the live show, but, of course, it never just cuts us off, thank goodness, for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just say, but we are going to wrap up. I just wanted to say once again, thank you, Bob. I had a feeling I never know where these conversations are going to go. And once again, we went into a very valuable area, I feel, for me personally and for a lot of other people. So thank you for being here and thank you for sharing what you're doing.
Yeah, well, thank you, Susan. Thank you for what you do on this show. I know it's hard work and you do it so well. And thank you for inviting me and re-inviting me and whatnot. And I think our conversation has been just delicious and very important for folks, and I hope folks recognize that there is a way to bring more honesty and truth into your life, and I hope they find it. And if I can help through GoDeeperTogether.com through the Soul Jazz program, I'd be happy to. So thank you very much. Thank you for the privilege of doing this.
Yes, well, thank you again, and I certainly will welcome you back in the future, and who knows where we'll go next time, because I think this continuing series has just been very, very interesting and intriguing to see where we take
it.
So,
it has
so,
for
yes.
me, too, so bless you. Yeah.
Great. Well, I'm so happy. So thanks again.
Mm.
So,
thank you.
And as we wrap up the live program, I just want to let people know that frontierbeyondfear.com is the place to go if you want to learn about upcoming shows and how to support the show as well, if you're interested in doing so. All the past shows are there. You can go to the archive. I am enhancing the site, and it goes. We talk about enhancing websites. I'm continuing to enhance the Frontier Beyond Fear site, and hope to soon have pages up for each guest, so you'll be able to access all of the shows for a given guest very easily. So just a show note about next week. We're now in the podcast, I know. Next week, I have Sue Elliott coming on the show again. She has not been on in a very long time, so I'll be reintroducing Sue to a number of you, or introducing her for the first time. She will be on the show Friday, June 21st at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Sue leads a group which has continued to expand called Portland Christians with Questions. And Sue was a worship leader in a Portland church. She's been very involved in Christian music locally. And she has very much opened up, and together with other conservative Christians, because they have all come from conservative paths, they are coming together and asking some really deep and honest questions about what they believe in a safe, non-threatening environment. And she's also been expanding and participating in other conferences now. She just came to one that involved the author of The Shack, and I know she's going to talk about that as well. So that's next week on the program, next Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, so June 21st. So anyway, thank you again, everyone, for being here. I really am feeling quite good after this show. You know, when we have these conversations on this show, I think it takes things to the level that we're actually talking about, these where we're really starting to deeply relate as much as we can in the context of a show. So, and I hope that this is helping you as well, and that you will then go out and find ways to deeply relate with others yourselves. And I will be putting that website up on the page that Robert Foreman mentioned, the GoDeeperTogether.com. I'll make sure that's up on the webpage as well so that you can easily access it. So thank you again for being here, everyone.